Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to today's Powered by Transova podcast. You have your usual hosts, whether you like it or not, Emily and Sarah. We are here today with somebody who has an important role. We all think we have important roles within Transova, but Luke's is managing the dairy donors at Transova. So Luke, why don't you go ahead and get started? Maybe talk about your background and how you got to be where you are now.
Okay. So yeah, my name is Luke Fulber. I have been with Transova now for about 5.5 years, started back in at the end of 2017. So a little bit of background information on me. So I grew up in Northeast Iowa originally on a small dairy farm. We milked about 80 to 90 cows. My dad still is milking cows. So been around Holsteins mainly my whole life, a little bit of Brown Swiss, Ayrshires, Guernseys, everything but the Jersey, which I'm okay with. Graduated high school, went down to Iowa State where I pursued a dairy science degree. Graduated in 2015. Moved back home, helped my dad dairy for a little bit. Then my wife and I got married in 2016, and she had an opportunity to come back to her school where she went to possibly teach there. And so that brought us to Northwest Iowa, to Lamar's. And Transova had originally applied to be a feeder at Transova, but turns out that there was an opening for a GAC herdsman, which specified in dairy specifically. So it was like, perfect storm happened and able to get the position that I am at today. And so started in 2017, been here 5.5 years now. And I am now classified as a dairy donor manager. I oversee the dairy donors all the way from calves to the day that they leave our program. So
it's a busy job then.
Oh yeah. Plenty, plenty busy.
A lot to look over. So I guess, you know, with that, Luke, maybe talk before we get into what you do specifically, maybe talk about the dairy services or the housing that's available to clients there in Iowa before I ask you our next question, just to give some people some background of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. So Iowa is very fortunate to have the location where we're at, where we can house calves and older donors. So right now, our calf program, we can take in newborn calves, feed them out either for custom raising or even work into our program eventually down the road. We also have the opportunity to bring them into our older donor housing where we can start working OPUs, IVF, conventional flushes. That program is usually anywhere from 5 months of age all the way up to 2 years or whenever they decide to get done. The one thing we do not have, though, is lactating animals here just because we don't have the facilities to manage those donors with milking and all that stuff. So
that could be your next thing that you take on.
It's been on my back, in my brain there. So I'm hoping maybe someday we can, but I think I'd have to. It's going to be pretty hard to do, I think. So
just in your spare time, right, Luke?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, in my 20 extra minutes I have.
So tell us what a typical day looks like for you, Luke.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, usually I get up at home about 5:30. I got some bulls I have at my place back home that I raised and saw on the side. And then I come into work. I'm usually at work no later than 7 and I'll come in. So most of my day, I guess, is at the GAC, which is our older donors, 5 months to 2 years of age. And so I'll come in about 7 o'clock. Then at that point, I'll drop feed, mix any new feed that needs to be mixed, give our FSH shots in the morning. And usually about 8:30, that kind of wraps up my morning chores. And then I will treat any animals that need to be treated for health concerns, which, knock on wood, we've been very fortunate this last couple of years that numbers have been really down on that. And then usually about 9:10 o'clock, we will start OPUs, which that will take about, depending on not the size of the day, anywhere from 2 hours up to maybe 4 hours. We got pretty good technicians up here that they can kind of crank through them and get them done. And do a very good job doing it. Then usually about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're wrapped up that. I put donors back in their pens and then start getting ready for evening chores, which would make up new FSH shots, generate shots if need be, breed any donors that came in the heat earlier in the morning. Yeah, stuff like that. And then usually about 4:30 is pretty much the end of my day here. And then if I'm needed, I'll go over to the calf site and help feed calves or anything like that if they need me there. So
very good. That sounds like a pretty big day and a pretty long day and lots of details in between. How many team members do you have working with you, or can you give us a little bit of insight into the team that you have working alongside of you?
Yeah. So for the last 5 years, for the most part, it's been myself up here at the GAC, Micah Scouten, and Austin Roars, who are all herdsmen up here that helped me out quite a bit. I work really close with Rihanna Frost, who is an OPU technician. She does most of our dairy donor OPUs up here and our flushes. And then at the calf site, I work really close with Allie Welch. Yeah, I have three employees at the calf site that I work really close with, Ross, Allie, and Maddie. And we work with them on every day. And that's kind of pretty much most of our team. We work pretty close with our vet services too as well. They help out the calf site with any calf health concerns or anything like that. So
perfect. So obviously, you know, big job, big team, a lot of moving parts, and a lot of high quality donors that you take care of on a daily basis of all ages. Tell us about the type of donors that you're taking care of and kind of what the goals are of those donors that are there.
Yeah. So most of our donors here are pretty much genomic purposes only. I think it's like 2010 is when the genomic world really blew up in the dairy industry. So a lot of clients decided to build off of that. It used to be a high type world, more show cattle, stuff like that. But as times have evolved, we are shifting more toward the genomics and working with larger dairies and working with their elite animals to create replacements that are going to be elite as well. That will work in their program very well. So a lot of my donors up here are genomic purposes. We do have a couple type and then a couple export deals that are going on with some clients. So we work with those as well. But yeah, like I said, we range all the way from 5 months to 2 years of age. And typically what we'll do is 5 months, we'll just acclimate them to our program where they get used to our ration, used to the environment, their donors that they're going to be in the pens with for most of their stay here. And then usually about 6.5 months, we'll start you doing OPU work potentially on them if we can get an arm in them. And our technician says that she is good to run. So our up here, we run every, donors can run every 2 weeks. We've had some where we run pregnant donors every week and had very good success with that. But we do let the clients know that, hey, okay, doing them every week, there is a risk that you could maybe lose the pregnancy, but we have, I think maybe on, I can count on 2 fingers of what we've had lost due to that. So.
And those are unstimulated, Luke,
yep,
right? Okay. Just want to make sure we note that in there.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
And actually, most of my program up here now is mostly unstimmed donors. We've had pretty good success with that. We are, I think the last couple of runs, we've been averaging about 25 oocytes per donor. And the majority of those are no stimmed. We do have a couple of clients that prefer stimmed anyway, so we'll do that. And it's been, like I said, it works, either one works really well. It depends on the clients, what their end goal is and how many donors they have here, essentially. With FSH kind of being on more expensive, they try to stay away from that. They got a lot of donors running that day. But I mean, we make it work both ways. So we are very open to that. Whatever the client kind of wants, we can work with it. Like I said, we'll work those donors about 6.5 months of age every 2 weeks. If the technician thinks that there is this donor needs a rest or anything like that, we communicate that to the clients right away after the OPU that way and explain why we think they need a rest. Sometimes it's just, you can just tell that the stimulation over and over and over, their ovaries look tired, I guess, in a way. And so like, yeah, giving them at least a month off between OPUs, it tends to help a little bit on that too. So that's been kind of a big thing that we promote here is communication with our clients directly as much as we can. And then, yeah, like I said, every 2 weeks we're working them. We will breed donors in between OPUs. That way they don't have to stop working them. I know a couple other people prefer that they rest them, but we've been got it kind of figured out how to working between OPUs to try to get them pregnant. And yeah, at the moment we get them pregnant, we do see a spike in embryo quality going up, and then actually embryo EDR going up as well. So it's been it works very well with our system. So.
And EDR, we try to clarify our alphabet soup that we have Transova, embryo development rate.
Yep.
I've heard you talk about communicating with the clients, which is obviously a very important thing. And then you're also tailoring to clients' wants and needs. What else sets the Transova donor housing program apart from others?
I think for the most part, the big thing is the communication aspect. I know the clients really like how we communicate with them directly. We'll do it either via email, phones, pretty much to whatever the client wants, whatever communicates best. I have one client in particular, he goes, don't waste your time with emails. Send me a text message. He goes, I'm gonna get you your answer a lot sooner. He goes, that's the best way to go. And so communication is mainly the big thing that I've heard from our clients anyways, is that, you know, they get the information that they need right away. If there's any health concerns, they find out right away. There's no lag. It's going through the people to get to that communication across. And then, yeah, I think I know up here, the herdsmen all really want to see the client succeed. You know, it doesn't matter if it's who it is or what their name is. They're all equal up here. I mean, we see them as, you know, an opportunity to help develop the dairy program throughout the country. And so to us, that's very, very crucial. And we pride ourselves on that. So
very good. And I know the clients really appreciate the communication and attention to detail, because obviously your barns are full, so you're doing something right. So Luke, you talked a lot about, you know, catering to the client, and also, you know, you've gotten some really good results here lately with your donors that you take care of. What would you say are the three keys to success of a dairy IVF program?
Consistency, I'd say, is number one. You know, making sure that you're not changing their environment up, their nutrition up on a regular, unregular basis. Stay consistent with those two things. That helps out quite a bit. Consistency on who's doing the OPUs as well. We've seen that help pay off a little bit too. So consistency is number one, in my opinion. The next thing is nutrition. The nutrition is what helps drive. I mean, if an animal isn't getting their energy needs that they need, repro is one of the first things to go in an animal. So if you're not meeting those energy needs, then we will see a decrease in results. And yeah, we've been pretty fortunate up here. Our program, we haven't actually changed our program a whole lot nutritionally since we started doing our TMR ration about 5 years ago. There's been small tweaks here and there just due to our hay changes, but other than that, it's pretty similar and it's been working really well for us. And then the third part, again, it's the client and herdsman relationship we have up here. Like I said, just that communication and the trust that they have in us to do the right things, you know, make the right calls, and, you know, that they know we want what's best for them over maybe what's best for Transova. Because again, in the end, their animal is what helps drive everything. So
very good. You've mentioned a lot of the things that make a successful IVF program. What other management practices have you found that help with embryo production? Or maybe more importantly, what are things that should people not do when they're involved in an IVF program?
So I think a lot of it that helps a little bit is, and this is again, all my opinion, I think if you can have the opportunity to house your donor, especially if you're going to be working them every 2 weeks in a donor housing program, that helps out quite a bit, because you're not having to trailer them, creating stress all the time, saves you time on having to haul donors in all the time. Another big thing is try to control the environment as much as you can. We're pretty fortunate here in Northwest Iowa. We're not crazy hot all the time or crazy cold, but we pretty much get ideal weather besides the wind, but that's what it is over here. But we're fortunate enough to have buildings that are pretty well sheltered and keep our animals covered during those bad storms or anything like that. That kind of helps reduce the environmental stress that can happen on them, because I mean, that seems to also have an effect as well. Let's see, what else would I say? Again, focus on your nutrition. Because an IVF donor that's running every 2 weeks is going to require just slightly more energy than a heifer that's just running out in the lot waiting to get bred. That's going to end up entering the milking system down the road. And because, like I said, you're having her reproduce follicles every 2 weeks, and to do that, it requires energy. So that's very, very important there. But at the same point, you don't want to be giving them too much energy where they get too fat on you, because then it makes the OPUs difficult to perform, because they get some of a fat pad in there, and then they have what they call a negative energy balance. I'm by no means a scientist. I can't fully explain that, but it gets to the point where they get too much energy that they start their goes toward growth rather than repro, for the most part, is kind of how that works out. But
very good. So you've really hit on the nutrition aspect of this, Luke, and how critical it is to a successful repro program. And you said you've made tweaks. You know, what would you tell somebody that's, you know, maybe doesn't want to do the dairy housing route when it comes to nutrition? You know, do they need to call a nutritionist, or is it something that they can just kind of tweak over time like you have and figure it out on their own?
Yeah, I know we have one client in particular. He does most of his nutrition work on his own. And you talk to most of these dairy guys, they've been around it long enough that they really know what works and what doesn't. But by all means, if there's ever any question, I'd say reach out to your nutritionist. They're going to give you the most accurate answer for the most part. But yeah, I'd say they, for the most part, they could probably tweak it themselves. And a lot of it's just look at your results closely. You know, look at, you know, is your number of oocytes increasing or decreasing? If they're decreasing and your heifer's starting to look a little chunky, then I'd say she's probably because she hit that negative energy balance and now she's starting to regress rather than maintaining what she needs to. And so at that point, then maybe you look at pulling back a little bit of energy and maybe increasing a little bit more hay, just so that way she gets her full without overdoing her energy intake. So
very good. The one thing that I've heard you say, Luke, is consistency, which is something that your program offers. The other thing that stands out to me, and this is kind of throwing our questions for a loop, but I know you're in communication strongly with, we had Rihanna on the podcast not too long ago about embryo development rates and things that way. Explain to me how you're listening to the results of the animals in order to make those tweaks, you know, to kind of optimize performance. Can you talk about the communication between your team and the professional services team?
Yeah. So yeah, for the most part up here, when we do OPUs, so that's the one thing that's nice about Transova too, that I forgot to mention earlier, is that we can do OPUs Monday through Thursday, as long as we have an arm available to do so. And most times we do. Right now we're running Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays up here. But yeah, for the most part, what it is when I'm sorting donors, I'm constantly poking my head in the door, like saying, hey, how's everything looking right now so far? Does stimulation look good? Does overall follicle population on these heifers been matching up to what they have been doing and stuff like that? And, you know, Rihanna's really good about communicating that to me right away. And then at the end of the day there, I'll ask like, okay, so, hey, what did you see what do you think is causing maybe some of these changes that you've seen? And so then she'll say, well, I saw this, and this, and I'll kind of think about it for a second and be like, okay, well, this is what's changed in the last week or 2 weeks that, okay, well, do you think this could correlate to that cause of change and stuff like that? And I think that talking to each other directly right after the OPUs, that way we know everything's still fresh in our heads and we can get that information back to our clients or to our team to see what changes we need to make to, again, help promote more follicles and higher EDR and more embryos in the end. So,
yeah, one of the things that Sarah and I preach on this podcast is that there's a lot that goes into our technology and services that is just not run the cow through the chute and see what you get. Like, there's a lot that goes into it from the start and finish of it all. So I think, yeah, what you're saying is aligning to what we've said before on this.
Yep. And the nice part about that too, is when we talk and communicate amongst each other, like, you know, we can kind of think like, well, I have this idea in the back of my head and it's whether it's right or wrong, I communicate it. And she'll be like, well, I think you're right or wrong. And then we kind of, it was like, well, why do we think that? And it's like, well, is it more of a donor issue then? Or is it maybe lab issues seem an issue, I mean, we can start pinpointing down what's causing the problems and, you know, hopefully get that turned around quicker than later. So that's kind of nice thing about TransOva. We communicate across departments and to help, again, better our results. So.
Yeah, for sure. So Luke, before we start recording, you mentioned that, you know, in your barn right now, you've got a grandmother and a granddaughter and then maternal sisters. And I think that fits really well into what you said before of seeing your client's success. Maybe talk a little bit about how it is for you to see those multiple generations in your program.
Yeah. Like I said, growing up in a small dairy in Northeast Iowa, you know, it was, you got to see the next generation 9 months later. We weren't big into IVF, did a little bit of flush work on the side and stuff like that. And I can remember growing up, it's like, I knew TransOva's name and it's like, no, there's no way one day I'll be like, TransOva is their own animal beast of a company. Like there's no way I'm going to be part of that or work with them or anything like that. And here I am 20 years later, thinking, sitting in the seat, helping make those decisions and stuff like that. And so to me, it's just been like a complete like joyride here. I mean, it's been phenomenal. So I never saw the generations quite like I do here, where you get to truly see your results from your breeding choices that you make. So like you said earlier, you know, up here, I got multiple generations, like up to three generations. I got the grandma with her daughter, then her granddaughters up here who have maternal sisters. And so, and they're all got different sires. So you get to see how your sire choices and how you built your breeding program, how they turned out. Is it, you know, you get to see that a lot quicker than what you do with your typical conventional AI and all that stuff. So no, it's, to me, it's just fascinating to see that how fast you can change the industry with the technology that TransOva has.
Very cool. And that might lead into this question, or maybe you've already answered it with that answer, but what would you consider your favorite part of the job? Is it the, you know, the genetic change and the seeing the results, or what constitutes a good day for Luke Fober?
Oh, a good day for me is when proofs come out every 4 months and you get to see your client's animals on that list. And then when they dominate that list like that, it's just a great feeling to see, like, you know, maybe not a whole lot of other people within the company understands that, because like I said, our dairy people are a little different. I'm not going to lie. But no, we get to see those results. And like I said, and seeing how, at sales, how animals sell at the sales, and, you know, see who's a hot ticket item on those sale bills and stuff. And to me, that's the highlight of my job. And then being able to talk to the clients, like, you know, hey, I saw you had stuff on the World Dairy Expo sale, like, and the World Classic. And like, you know, you're up there. I had a client that sold a $3 million bull there once. And to me, it's just, and yeah, we helped make that happen. So to me, that's just seeing those kind of results have been, that's what drives me every day to see. So.
Yeah. The dairy industry with genomics has really pushed the button to accelerate genetic gain. And they utilize IVF to the fullest when it comes to embryo production, because they want it, like you said, they want to see that genetic turn quick. Yep. And so you'll see them, dairy guys after proofs, it's like a total 360 change of their plan, which is crazy to me as somebody from the beef world. It's wild.
Yeah. It's almost as funny because like they'll almost take a week off because like they see how their, like I said, their breeding program works. And they're like, well, this worked for us at this one point, let's go back to that. And then so they, like, they'll revamp their whole program and, you know, and that, like I said, that program changes every 4 months. And that, to me, that's just fascinating because, yeah, like I said, back home, you know, growing up like that, you're when you're just doing an AI, you just, you know, well, this is our breeding program. And it's about a year later before you realize, oh, shoot, that didn't work. Now I got to change it up. And, you know, and now I got the next 9 months to have to still have your, what you're using before you see your true changes. So, yeah, no, to me, it's. Yeah, the dairy world is just fascinating with what has happened since that 2010, 2011. So,
yeah, definitely. So, Luke, I think this leads into our next question really well. You know, as somebody who grew up on a dairy, you're not necessarily back home on the dairy every day, but you're still in the industry. You know, I think a lot of college students out there don't have the opportunity to go back home and farm. And some do, which is great. But, you know, what advice would you give somebody entering the workforce today that wants to stay within the dairy industry?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's plenty. So like for me, like you said, for example, kind of going back home to that smaller dairy is kind of probably not an option anymore. Just because, yeah, every way it costs of everything to get that to that point where to operate to feed two families on it. Pretty hard to do with current milk prices. So kind of had a good conversation the other day with my supervisor about this, but you know, this is the next best thing I could be doing. The nice thing about the dairy industry is that there is so many different opportunities that you could apply yourself to still be part of the dairy industry. You know, you could go work on a dairy, for example, and or you can work for like Midwest Dairy Association, where you were helping promote the dairy industry and marketing and stuff like that. Work for someone like Transova or like Select Sires that deal with the repro side. And I mean, there's enough parts of the dairy industry that you can still have your fingers in it and still be part of it and feel like you're still doing your part, even though you might not be directly back, you know, back at home milking cows or something like that. So it's kind of nice with the dairy industry. There's plenty of opportunity to still be part of it and make that difference.
Yeah. And I would even say within Transova, there's different varying opportunities, you know, even from a dairy perspective, you know, whether that be calf care, donor care. I think, Luke, you're always, you know, working with your team and hiring for your team. And so I think there's areas of opportunity. You just have to look at different companies that offer those.
Yeah. And ask those companies, you know, well, you know, this is what I'm interested in, but is there other opportunities too? I mean, don't be afraid to ask questions. I mean, that's a big thing. That during interviews, I always try to push the interviewee to, like, you know, hey, if you have questions, like, you know, ask, you know, there's no such thing as a stupid question. The only stupid question is the one that I asked, in my opinion. And so it's, yeah, ask away, because that's always, you're never going to get the answers that you want. So.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally agree. I think some people, we put ourselves in a box, and you know, if you're not asking questions and you don't know what's available. And somebody once told me too that if you want something, if you don't say it out loud, nobody else is going to know and help you get there. So, you know, that's why you need to voice your opinion and your dreams. That way, you know, you never know who could be out there to help you get there.
Exactly. I mean, I'd say probably for the first 3.5 years here, I was probably in my box. And then I don't know what changed or what happened, but yeah, in the last year and a half, the changes that have happened because you know, I've said something and I voiced my opinion or stuff like that. I mean, it's, yeah, I realize I'm not in my box anymore, and it's a whole different world.
Luke, you mentioned earlier in the podcast about you didn't think you would ever be working for a company like Transova. Now that you are, what has your perception of the company changed, or kind of, you know, what were your thoughts then versus now? Are they the same? Or just give us your overall opinion as you've evolved through the company.
Yeah. So I actually, back in college, I took a ET class, and they actually came out and toured Transova, but I didn't take the opportunity to do so. Cause like I said, it's like, well, you know, I know what they are. You know, they're one of the elite IV or repro companies out there. So it's like, you know, like I said, I never thought I'd have anything to do with it. And so didn't take that opportunity, and that's kind of the regret I had. But you know, for the most part, my opinion of it hasn't changed, because I've always thought very highly of Transova. They've always, everyone I've talked to have had good comments about them to talk about, even, and our clients now are still the same way. And so to me, the opinion hasn't changed a whole lot. But after starting to work here, I mean, I never realized the opportunities Transova has besides IVF and like ET. You know, I just thought, oh, they just come out and do your flush, and that's the day. No, there is so much more to the program than just coming out to your farm and collecting those embryos and freezing them for you and then calling it a day. There's way more to it than that. And so that has been really eye-opening to me. So,
like, we have a podcast. very good. Well, Luke, is there anything that we didn't ask you that you'd like to touch on? Anything more about dairy heifer management? Anything that we left out?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. Again, if there ever is any questions, yeah, reach out to our client service reps or our head office, and they'll get you in touch with the right people. On if you have questions about our program, you can reach out to me myself. They can get you that information. Like I said, we have the opportunities here to house donors. If it's something that interests them, they can definitely call in and we can try to make something work. But yeah, I mean, I think we covered pretty much everything. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Luke, for joining us today. It's very big level stuff, and we could probably just spend an hour on nutrition or, you know, with dairy housing, but appreciate you taking the time. And yeah, we'll be sure to link some emails and phone numbers in the show notes just in case anybody has questions, as always. But thanks again, everybody, and we'll catch you next time on the Powered by Transova podcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.